In these verses, we come to the last part, the qualifications for office in the Church of God. We have been looking at these aspects of Christian character which are required in men if they would serve as overseers in the Christian Church. And we have seen, as we have gone down from verse 2 through to where we are now in verse 6, we have seen as we have gone down that these aspects of Christian character have a wider application than simply to men who desire the office of a bishop. And this is because such men are Christians first before they are office bearers in the church. And that should always be remembered, that the pastor, elders, deacons are Christians first before they are men who hold office in the church. And therefore, the precepts of God's word will apply to them as Christian men. And true it is that they must be present in an exceptional degree in order for them to be appointed to the offices that they hold. But first and foremost, they are Christian men. And therefore, these things that we have been looking at will apply to Christians more generally as well. Office bearers are not a unique breed of men apart from every other Christian. They are Christians like other Christians, and therefore these things that we have been looking at have lessons in them for us all, as I hope we have been seeing. And it is true also in the case of these two verses we are to look at this morning. And I hope that we will feel that there is something in it for us all, and that, as I've said before, these are not verses that are to be restricted to an occasion for the ordination of a minister or the ordination of deacons, elders, but these are things that speak to us each and every one. Now notice here in these two verses that the devil is mentioned now twice over. He fall into the condemnation of the devil and the snare of the devil. Now we shouldn't be surprised that before we leave this list of qualifications that the devil is mentioned. You see, such men are the prime target of the evil one. He wants to come at and attack every Christian in the church, but the devil knows very well that it's in his best interests to aim his fiery darts at the spiritual leaders of the church. If he can attack them successfully, he will, by that, harm the rest of the people. In this sense, the verse applies, "Smite the shepherd, and the sheep are scattered." And so you see, there is this warning here concerning the evil one and what he tries to do. It's a very keen and a very real thing for spiritual leaders. Paul says, "We are not ignorant of his devices," the evil one. And he was speaking from experience. He knew that he, as a spiritual leader, was attacked by the evil one in a way that other Christians are not. And he couldn't remain ignorant of those evil devices. And so here these matters are hinted at in these two verses. And I want us to look at the double warning here in these verses. Not a novice, lest being lifted up with pride he fall into the condemnation of the devil. That's a warning about pride, isn't it? And then verse 7, moreover he must have a good report of them which are without, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And that in verse 7 is presumption. Pride and presumption. Two things that the evil one would just love to fill spiritual leaders with, in order to harm them and harm the church of God as well. Well, we're just going to look at verse 6 this morning. Beware of pride, not a novice. When you consider men for the office of overseer, says Paul, do not appoint a novice, lest being lifted up with pride he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Now that's a very sensible rule, isn't it? You should never ordain a comparatively new Christian to spiritual office in the church. If you look in the margin there, if you have one, the word novice can be rendered one newly come to the faith. We're not talking here necessarily about age in years. We're talking about the length of time a man has been a Christian. Spiritual maturity. And it's because of the very real danger that if you give an immature Christian this office, it will go to his head. And he will be lifted up with pride. And it will be disastrous. And there is that terrible precedent that Paul mentions. Pride was the first sin of the devil, and made the devil what he now is. Lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Led to his downfall. It can lead to the downfall of a man who is prematurely appointed to this high spiritual office in the church. Let's just look and remind ourselves of what happened in the case of the devil. In Isaiah chapter 14, we have an Old Testament insight into the fall which took place before the fall of man. A fall which took place in heaven. Isaiah 14 from verse 13. One called Lucifer is mentioned. For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven, I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. And verse 14, I will ascend above the heights of the clouds, I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell. That's what happened. The highest ranking angel was filled with ambition and pride, and sought to replace God and be as God instead, to dethrone the Most High and take his place. And he revolted, and a number of angels revolted with him. How it could take place in a perfect, holy place like heaven, I don't know, and we're not told. But we are told of the fact of it. And that original revolt was put down by God. And we read in 2 Peter 2 and verse 4 these words. We're not given a complete account of what happened, but little glimpses of the event. 2 Peter 2 verse 4, God spared not the angels that sinned, but cast them down to hell, and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved unto judgment. Well, you see, that's what happened to this great angel and the other angels that followed him. He is now Satan. They are now demons. They were lifted up with pride. They have fallen into condemnation. And that is a terrifying thing. And the Apostle Paul says that always the devil is wanting to make people like himself, filled with pride, in order that they might fall by that sin. And it is particularly the case in the church. And Paul says, if you appoint a man to office who is not ready for it, then the devil can find his opportunity and make him like himself, lifted up with pride, and he fall into the condemnation of the devil. Just like the evil one who once held the highest position in heaven that an angel could hold, and he became proud and he fell. So if such a man holds the highest position in the Christian church, he can be lifted up with pride and fall. Beware of pride. Now this supplies us with some very relevant lessons in the sin of pride. And I want us to widen it out beyond that of an office bearer and apply it to us all. And I want us to look at this phrase, lifted up with pride. Literally, being puffed up. It's the picture of smoke going up in little clouds, being puffed up. Smoke ascending. And it's a vivid picture of what human pride is. First of all, found in the devil, and always ever afterwards, the devil would make it to be found in us as well. We can discover something about pride here from following the picture given of it. Lifted up, smoke going up. But what is smoke? And what is pride? Well, smoke has an emptiness and a lightness about it. There's nothing solid, weighty, or substantial there at all. And that's what a proud person is like. A proud person is like that. Empty. Light. Nothing there really at all. You see, in the case of a recent convert, there's little of God's dealings yet in that person's experience which would give him a right view of himself. Little of God's dealings with him which produces true humility. And the office, if he had it, would give him a false sense of his importance, and he would imagine that he has knowledge and that he has experience and that he has maturity that he does not have, and that would be ruinous to the man and ruinous to the church. Nothing there. Smoke, vapor. And a proud person is really someone who imagines he's something when he really isn't. In Galatians 6 verse 3, if a man thinketh himself to be something when he is nothing, he deceiveth himself. Now that's pride. The people who are proud, by and large, are the people who have nothing to be proud about, but they imagine that they have. And they're people who often are the most vocal, and you listen to them and they've got much to say about themselves. They're always talking about themselves, referring to themselves, indirectly alluding to themselves, their abilities, their so-called gifts, their attainments, their accomplishments. But you see, the saying is, empty barrels make the loudest noise. The shallowest streams make the biggest babble and chatter. And people who are proud, they are lifted up with pride. They're like insubstantial, empty vapor, smoke. There's nothing there at all. There's nothing really to be proud about. Those who really have the qualifications for eldership in the church are the most humble and the most quiet about themselves. And these qualities are discerned by others. And God has to almost force them forward to seek the office of eldership. It's not the question of a man swaggering himself into the office, wondering what the church has been doing all this time in being so backward in choosing him and appointing him. Not at all. Such a man is usually very reticent and very humble, and the last man who feels he's adequate for the position. But you see, there's reality there in that case. The Lord has long been dealing with such a man, bringing him to the position whereby he's prepared for office. There's solidity and weight and substance and reality about such a man. But a novice put into the office, lifted up with pride, smoke, vapor, there's nothing there. Although he imagines there is. As someone has put it, pride is to the character like the attic to the house, the highest part and generally the most empty. Pride is to the character like the attic to the house, the highest part and generally the most empty. Not a novice. It's an irony, isn't it? An irony to see a proud person, to listen to a proud person, because everybody knows that with that self-centered talk and that oozing of self-importance, there's someone who thinks they are something, when it's plain that they are hardly anything at all. If they really were something, they wouldn't be talking like that and trying to make that impression upon people. Lifted up with pride, emptiness, lightness, like smoke, like vapor. But here's another aspect of it. Smoke also is something that, of course, tends to curl upwards, doesn't it? And that is pride as well. There is an elatedness, lifted up with pride. In other words, a particular self-image that a proud person has. We alluded to it just now, and we can enlarge upon it here. It's said by Daniel in Daniel chapter 5 verse 20 of the pride of Nebuchadnezzar. His heart was lifted up and his mind was hardened in pride. See, that's pride, isn't it? When Nebuchadnezzar walked abroad and he surveyed the great city and he said, "Is this not great Babylon which I have built?" And he felt so important. He was lifted up with pride in his heart, hardened with pride in his mind, and God dealt with him. But that was his self-image, you see. How great I am, because I am king and head of this great empire. I have built this great city with its wonders which reflect upon me. And the proud person has this image of himself, herself, which is really completely exaggerated and completely wrong. Romans 12 and verse 3 reminds us of how it ought to be with us all. Romans 12 verse 3, "For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. You see, that's the right self-image. Not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. You see, humility is not to have no self-image that's worthy. Humility is to have the right self-image, not more highly than we ought to think. A realistic, accurate assessment of ourselves. But pride, you see, is totally off the scale. It's more highly than we ought to think. It's completely extreme and goes beyond anything that is right. In 2 Timothy 3 verse 4, the same word is used of heady, high-minded, in that wrong sense, that toweringly high view of yourself that is completely inappropriate and completely wrong. Bloated conceit, swaggering around and strutting about the place as if we are some great one. You see, lifted up with pride, elation, going up in one's estimation, out of control, completely wrong. Now, generally, proud people feel the need to defend their reputation. This is another aspect of it, you see. There is this self-image which is so ridiculous that in their conceit they feel they have a name and a reputation to guard and to protect, their fancied greatness. That's why you find that a proud person is so easily hurt. Let one suggested criticism be made and immediately they jump to their own defence. They've been wounded deeply and terribly, and the reaction is completely out of all proportion to what has been said or what was meant, and there's a sulking that sets in and a self-pity. Oh, the thing that was said about me, oh how terrible, oh how could they do that to me, how they could say that about me, and there's this turning inwards. You see, that's pride. And there's often this plotting of retaliation to get back, because I have been attacked and I have been verbally spoken to in that hostile manner, and I'm going to get my own back. This is pride, because you see, meekness and humility has nothing to defend and nothing to fight for. A person who has a right estimate of himself or herself, if criticized, if attacked, well, so what? I'm nothing. Doesn't matter. A pride, oh! So that's how you tell a proud person. A proud person can never bear any admonition. How dare that person speak to me about what's wrong with me? Pride, you see. Arrogance. Infallibility. Don't you speak to me, because I'm always right. You've got no right to speak to me in that fashion. But a meek, humble person will take it. There's nothing to fight for, nothing to defend, because there's no corner to defend and no position and stance to adopt. A lowly-minded person is not an elated person with fancied self-importance, but is where he or she belongs and can take these things. Are you upset? Are you still thinking about that something that was said to you a while back? Still turning it over in your mind? Still feeling the hurt in your spirit, and still feeling provoked and wanting to get your own back? My dear friend, what is that? That's pride. That's pride that's doing that. The sinful pride of the heart. You need God to bring you down and to put you in your place and to make you think to yourself, well, who am I anyway? Who am I? It doesn't matter. And if this thing has been said to me or done to me, well, trust God to bless it to my good, that I might learn something from it. And that would be much better. But a proud person. Thinking of the case of Haman in Esther chapter 5 verse 13. You turn to that book. And oh, what a proud person Esther was. Not Esther, Haman rather, but the book of Esther. Esther 5 verse 13. And you've got the case of Haman where he was promoted by King Ahasuerus, and he was so doted upon, so entrusted with so many blessings and privileges and honours. And we read there, Esther 5 verse 11, Haman began to regale his family with the glory of his riches, the multitude of his children, all the things wherein the king had promoted him and advanced him above the princes and servants of the king. And Haman said, yes, moreover, I got this special invitation to Queen Esther's banquet, yet all this availeth me nothing, so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Why? Because Mordecai had simply refused to bow and scrape to the man. And Haman is filled with indignation and anger and wants to kill Mordecai. That's pride, isn't it? The whole of life is spoilt because the high and mighty Haman has not been given the honours he demands. And for a proud person, there's little rest of mind, little quietness and contentment, because they're always suspecting someone saying something about them. Always suspecting that someone's got it in for them. Always looking for the next, or listening for the next criticism. Or so sensitive and ready to fight back at a moment's notice. Oh, what a poor state of affairs. You can imagine, can't you, an elder being appointed in the church, a novice lifted up with pride and so guarding and protecting his reputation and his standing, and not being able to bear the least little thing being said about him or to him without jumping and pouncing, suspecting everybody, having so much to guard and protect and defend. Such a man could never be at rest in the office. Neither can any Christian be at rest. But you see, meekness, humility, well, what does it matter? Lifted up with pride like smoke going up. It's interesting, isn't it, that it was said of our blessed Lord, when he was reviled, what did he do? The Son of God, the Lord of glory, did he jump and retaliate, accuse, defend himself? When he was reviled, he reviled not again. But what was said of him? I am meek and lowly in heart. Doesn't matter. It's only a proud person that flies off the handle and goes to extremities when something is said, something is done. Elation. And then one further aspect here. Pride is like smoke, light, insubstantial, nothing really there. Elation, going up, high. But smoke is also something that gets into the eyes and clouds the vision and temporarily blinds. And that's the proud person as well. The understanding and the judgment is clouded. They don't see things clearly and plainly when they are like that. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 2. The apostle teaches there that if any man think that he knoweth anything, he knoweth nothing yet as he ought to know. His pride has blinded him to what he really knows. He can't see. He can't see that he knows very little, really. He's got that wrong sense and appreciation of his knowledge. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 4. He is proud, knowing nothing. You see the same thing there. That pride which blinds, as someone has put it, enter pride, exit wisdom. Why is it that a proud person doesn't see things clearly? Well, you see, you can really only know spiritual things if the Lord teaches you. You are shut up to God's instruction and God's revealing truth to you. We can only grow in understanding if the Lord Himself teaches us. But if there's pride, the Lord won't be our teacher. James 4 verse 6. God resisteth the proud. And such a person, a proud person, will have in his pride a bar to spiritual progress. It's only the meek that he guides in judgment. It's only the meek that he teaches his way. A proud person has God against him, and he will remain a novice always, knowing very little really and being unteachable because of his very pride. The smoke is in his eyes, clouds and obscures and keeps them, thinks things dim and indistinct. It's the person at Jesus' feet that learns of Jesus, not the person who is high and mighty and is above divine instruction. Clouded, smoke in the eyes. Such a person, I say, will never get past being a novice and will never ever be fit for leadership in the church. So then, these three things, aspects of pride, light and insubstantial, going up, exaggerated sense of one's own importance, and that being kept with limited knowledge and spiritual understanding. Now let's conclude with a few observations by way of application. Isn't this a wise prohibition? You see the common sense of the scriptures. Not a novice, lest. Because such a person, a man like this, would ruin himself and he would ruin God's church. In chapter 5, verse 22 of Timothy, lay hands suddenly on no man. Don't lay hands in ordination suddenly upon a new Christian. He's not capable of holding that office. It would be counterproductive. We read, you know, even concerning the Apostle Paul, that 10 years went by before he and Barnabas were sent out from the church at Antioch upon the first missionary journey. 10 years. And in Acts chapter 14, where we read that Paul and Barnabas ordained elders in churches in every city, It was only on the second visit that they did it. And time had elapsed for men in those churches to grow in grace and manifest those qualities necessary. And no novices were appointed. Not a novice. But let's see where all pride would lead if it only could. This is the frightening part, dear friends. I wonder if we appreciate it. Lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. You know, what was that thing at the beginning which happened to the devil? Or rather, what the devil did? What was it? Was it not an attempt by that highest angel to tear God down from his throne and to seat himself there instead? That's pride. That's in principle exactly what the devil did. And do you know, if human pride could have its full course and run itself to completion, do you know what human pride would do? Human pride would climb up to heaven, and human pride would, if it could, dethrone God and be God himself. A proud man is a rival to Almighty God. A proud woman wants to be upon the throne of the Most High. That's what pride is. It's not something that originated with human beings. It originated with a creature of vast intelligence and awesome powers, who is now Satan, and was lifted up with this thing and now has fallen into condemnation. And he just loves to make other people proud like himself. But pride is so frightening, because if it could have its full way, it would replace God. And so you see, God sees pride wherever he sees it in the human heart, wherever he hears it in the human voice. God sees pride as an attack upon his supremacy and an attack upon his sovereignty. And that is why Proverbs 6 says God hates pride. It is an abomination unto him. It's not just a human being exaggerating a little about himself. It's a human being acting like the devil. A human being wanting to be God. A human being who wants to tear God from the throne of heaven and sit there himself. You say, oh, surely not. Surely pride is not as bad as that. Remember its origin, where it came from and what it's following. And Paul says, lest being lifted up with pride, he fall into the condemnation of the devil. That's why when God sees pride, he will always bring it down in a person. Proverbs 16, verse 18. Pride goeth before a fall, and a haughty spirit before destruction. And you know that verse quoted earlier, James 4 and verse 6. God resisteth the proud. The word resisteth means God is ranged against a proud person in a warlike fashion, like an army in military formation to attack. Whenever there's a species of pride, God is the enemy. Resist the proud. And you know, God, as part of his work in you and me, if we're Christians, is to deal with pride. And if we did but know it, everything that God does with us is really dedicated to strip us of our self-importance, to bring us low, and to bring us to his feet, and to empty us of everything that is unrealistic and wrong and exaggerated and false about us, in order that he might produce in us that contrary grace, humility and meekness and lowliness of heart. Because that is the great thing. Matthew 18 and verse 4, Jesus says there that true greatness is the last thing you would imagine true greatness to be, and that is humility. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is greatest in the kingdom of heaven. The way up is down. God brings us to stature and to real spiritual importance and real qualification for his service by bringing us down, by humbling us, by making us persuaded that we really, at the end of the day, who are we? The greatest man that ever walked this earth, our Lord Jesus Christ, as man, learn of me, he says, I am meek and lowly of heart. Matthew 11, verse 29. Surely that's why God touches our health, isn't it? So that making us feel our physical weakness, we might be humbled and we might look to him the more. Surely that's why God brings troubles into our lives, appoints sadness for us, appoints tribulation and things that are hard to cope with and to bear. Why? Not as a vindictive God sending these things cruelly, but in order to bring us lower and lower and lower to his feet, so that we'll come to see more and more that without him I can do nothing. I need so much more grace than I ever thought I did. I'm such a sinner. I'm so helpless and needy. These things are good for us, dear friends. Anything that brings us low, gives us a true estimate of ourselves, makes us dependent on the Lord, makes us distrust our own abilities, our own strength, anything like that, is God working humility in us to keep us from the sin of pride, to keep us from the evil one who wants to make us proud and follow him. Ah, that work of God making us truly great in true humility. You know, humility is an unconscious grace. It's never something that we seek, and never something that we actively produce in ourselves. There's no such book entitled Humility and How I Attained It by A. Proudman. No such book. Because you see, we are made humble indirectly as part of God's dealings with us. And as we're made to know God better and seek to be faithful before him, be in prayer and in the word, and mortify sin and suffer for his sake, and are grateful for his blessings and try to serve him, we find that God deals with us and brings us down and down and down, and we are more like the Lord Jesus Christ, meek and lowly in heart,
and we find rest unto our souls. And there's not that lightness and emptiness of the smoke. There's not that ascending and elevation of the smoke. There's not that clouded blindness and self-deception of the smoke. We're what we ought to be as meek and humble Christians. And Psalm 138 and verse 6 becomes true of us. Though the Lord be high, yet hath he respect unto the lowly, but the proud he knoweth afar off. Isn't that wonderful? God the Most High, who will not give his glory to another and will brook no rival, he has respect unto the lowly. Oh, may God empty us of ourselves. May God bring us more to the likeness of his beloved Son. Oh, may God keep us from the sin of pride, and especially in any positions of spiritual leadership in the church, lest he fall into the condemnation of the devil. A great man was once asked, what are the three steps to heaven? First, humility. Next, humility. Third, humility. May God bless us and make us that for his name's sake. Let us sing.